How do you illustrate musically the romantic ideal of the suffering artist? A young soul experiencing emotions to the fullest, from tender vulnerability to ecstatic joy, but also intense sadness and suffering, and questioning what it all means in despair. Franz Liszt does it perfectly in his epic tone poem Vallée d'Obermann, or Obermann's Valley, starting from the very first chord. It's a lot of pain and suffering here. So it's A minor 7 in the right hand, but with the F sharp as a syncopation in the left hand makes it very unstable. Especially the dissonance between the F sharp and the G. But it's resolving. At last, the E minor second inversion, another suspension on the beat. A lot of pain and dissonance. This is just the first step on a long journey that lasts around 14 minutes to play through the piece. And before we go down the valley of the beginning, let's check out the views from the mountaintop towards the end of the piece. So in the Liszt repertoire, we have these three books called Années de Pèlerinage, or Years of Pilgrimage. The first with the subtitle Switzerland, the second Italy, and the third no specific country. And they are essentially the result of Liszt living and traveling in Europe for a period of about 4 years, together with his girlfriend Countess Marie de Gaulle, starting in Switzerland in 1835-36. And as usual with Liszt works, it's a bit complicated to track the history of it, but he first published a collection of pieces called A Traveler's Album in 1842 that includes 7 of the 9 pieces from this Swiss book. Then he came back and revised them later, which is something he did quite often with his compositions, and published the final version of the collection in 1855 with some pretty heavy reworkings and 2 new pieces. And the inspiration for the music here comes from a novel called Obermann by the French author and pioneer romantic figure Étienne de Senancour. And in fact, the early version in A Traveler's Album was dedicated to the author. It's about this romantic, sensitive soul, Obermann, who goes out in nature, specifically the impressive landscape of the Swiss Alps with steep mountains and valleys, basically to seek solitude and retreat from the complexities of society. There he wrestles with heavy questions like the nature of existence, the pursuit of truth and beauty, and the challenges of human relationships. It's written in a monologue form, tracking his thoughts and feelings in letters and diary entries, and Liszt includes 2 paragraphs on the score to provide the proper conceptual backdrop for the music. I'll read them in full, but let's add some of the first section as background music. What do I want? What am I? What should I ask of nature? Every cause is invisible, every end deceptive. Every form changes, every time span works itself out. I feel I exist in order to be consumed by ungovernable desires, to drink in the seductiveness of a fantastical world, to stand aghast at its voluptuous error. And the second one? Unutterable sensitivity. Charm and torment of our empty years, immense awareness of a nature that everywhere overwhelms and is impenetrable, all-embracing passion, indifference, advanced wisdom, voluptuous freedom, all the needs and deep sorrows that a mortal heart can hold, I felt, I suffered in that memorable night. I took a dark step towards the age of weakness, I swallowed up 10 years of my life. Then there's also a third long paragraph from Lord Byron's poem Childe Harold's Pilgrimage that works with the same kind of topic matter, but put even more poetically. Could I embody and embosom now that which is most within me? Could I wreak my thoughts upon expression and thus throw soul, heart, mind, passions, feelings, strong or weak, All that I have sought and all I seek, bear, know, feel, and yet breathe into one word, and that word were lightning, I would speak. But as it is, I live and die unheard, with the most voiceless thought, sheathing it as a sword. Liszt basically works with this psychological material and writes a musical essay on it. Let's look at the music and see how he does that. The piece is one connected whole, roughly four sections of different characters, but with connected thematic material, transformed in typical Liszt style. It takes between 13 and 15 minutes, depending on tempi. I personally get restless with too slow tempi, so my recording, which I have on my separate artist channel, is closer to 13 minutes. So we've heard the start already, the scale going down the valley. I think it's also meant metaphorically as an inner mental state of mind, like the valley of bad thinking. And this is a significant property of the piece, that it stays in this sad and slow character for a long time, like a third of the piece, 5 minutes, just wallowing in the depths of doubt. And it's an unusual choice for a concert piece of this scope, but it's also a reason for its greatness. The reward comes later, but you have to endure this first. And here, we could resolve this phrase to the implied key of E minor, if it was like this. That would settle the tonality from the start. But Liszt, instead of this, he turns immediately to somewhere else harmonically. So it modulates to G minor. It's the same feeling as the C sharp in Beethoven's Third Symphony in the seventh bar, which is an important bar in music history, because it's an immediate modulation, like searching for somewhere new before the tonality, the key is really established in the beginning. I mean, we sense the E minor, the key, and it's like a 2-5-1, this dominant 6-4 chord, but then instead of resolving, G minor cadence here, with another of these suspensions, the minor major 7 top note suspension. Then we go for another round. So it's the same chord, but now in G minor. And again, modulating away. So already with the two first line, you set this stage of searching for something else. You need answers, you're not very unsettled music. Then a new idea, higher register, sotto voce, soft voice. More painful dissonances, so diminished chord. That's like a stable chord in this context, but then a suspension on that. There's not really much happening here. It goes on for a while. I'm not going to play through all the music in this format. I'm just going to mark some structurally important points. After a page, we get even slower writing, like really depressed music here, as I said. So it's the same type of suspensions, but just stretched out even more. It's almost like you forget where it's coming from, and then the resolution is something new. Long pause. One more. And resolving. And then the initial melody comes back here. So
So we get these ideas a few times, you really have to wade through it. And just as it seems the darkest, the section ends with these really low, like timpani drum beats. It seems like that would be the end. But then we get the light, the complete opposite contrast for the piece. And so on. Now, the really cool thing here is that these two themes or motifs are connected. It's mostly the first three notes, but it's unmistakably the same three notes. So in the first theme in minor, so it's the syncopation, a longer second note, and a dissonance, a suspension on the second note. The difference is, of course, in the high register, and it's in major. So then it's repeated and it's slightly different how it continues, but it's basically cut from the same cloth, as it were. It starts off quite still, pianissimo, dolcissimo, but then it gets moving more and more, little developmental section here. Like it's really searching for answers. Ends with a solitary melodic statement going down in the register again. And here we get another kind of peculiar section marked recitativo. And it's pretty much like in an opera where a character drives the plot forward with words and action over lighter accompaniment, but here it's only instrumental, of course. And it's expanding on the scale motif. This is the doubt coming back essentially, now finding a stronger hold and getting more frustrated and angry. And it's culminating in these tempestuous octave runs, kind of cursing higher powers for all the pain inflicted, and presses on even past the point where you feel it should be done. Finally, it reaches these heavy timpani blows again. Chromatic movement. And here it's kind of a disarray. We get these fragments of the motif. Just like, what should we do in the wake of this torment? And we get an answer of the timpani. Like fate speaking, and here like pleading. Fate answering, no. And then a final solitary statement again. So, coming down and calming down, and here we're ready, finally, for the final stage, which is acceptance. And it's an incredibly beautiful moment. It all calms down, and we get the major back. It's the same as we had the theme in major when we had it up here. But now it's down here and inner voice in the right hand, just marking the harmony as soft as possible and then let the melody float. So this is the final fourth part of the piece basically, starting here. That's repeated one more time in a higher octave with more, getting more and more life towards the end of it, basically. We get another amazing moment after this round, like playing harp on the piano here. And can you see what that is? It's an inversion of the theme. So instead of the descending scale fragment is flipped to go upward instead. And like heroically. Then here we get like a more still episode again, and it goes back to minor. And another beautiful moment. And the secret of this moment is the D natural. So in E minor, he goes from the harmonic mode, so using the D sharp as it's part of the dominant chord in harmonic minor. This would be the harmonic dominant. But instead, he flips it to the natural minor mode. And then continuing. You're really lovely moment. Some tension starting to come up here. Back to the harmonic mode. So it's a restatement of the descending theme in major again, with an ever increasing energy charge with these repeated chords. Also, sempre animando, sil fine, always more animated until the end. So it's like when you have more and more movements, ultimately it will be vibrating. That's what it feels like playing these repeated chords. They start pretty much just adding energy all the time. And so on. If we go to the final two pages, we're almost through this big journey. We get thrown between medians, E flat major and G major. So E flat, G. Very fresh, the harmonic or chromatic median, always a fresh perspective. Dialogue between the registers, like the forces of being. And here a octave scale bonanza. I love how Liszt isn't ashamed of his climaxes, just goes for it. French six chords. A secondary dominant turned into another French six chord dominant, leading note to the melody statement again in a fuller register. Now, for the final page, we get a final harmonic transformation of the theme, which is epic. So instead of the normal E major to C sharp minor, which we're used to, we get this. It's the E half diminished to C to F. Back to E. And now for a second alternative. E fully diminished to C to F minor. Or with repeated, of course. So in the end, just take a shorter and shorter fragment and repeats it, and we oscillate between E major and C7. Or you can call it an augmented six chord. So it's like we're torn between different strands of harmony, but we finally settle with E major in the end. So we celebrated life, love conquered darkness and turned it into something great. But there is one statement remaining, and it feels like a question. So it's like the melody from the very beginning in minor. It's a little bit shorter here and more syncopated. And also in fortissimo, and like the dissonances are now blinding. This is the augmented chord, the flat six, resolving. So it resolves to a major chord still, but it doesn't really feel triumphant anymore. So I feel it both as like an open question and also a total stop. It's hard to do justice in a performance, but it's genius writing by Liszt. Now, if we recall the Byron quote in the beginning, could I throw all that I would have sought and all I seek into one word, and that word would be lightning, I would speak. But as it is, I live and die unheard, with the most voiceless thought sheathing it as a sword. So this phrase poses a question. Are you sure it wasn't just an illusion, a fantasy, something that only could have been? Or can it be real? Is it possible to live like this, to let hope win over doubt? Go out in the world and experience it, and let it mean something. Let it have purpose. Speak lightning, don't sheathe your swords.